You guys love breaking news, and you did it. You broke it. I think what no one in this room wants to admit is that Trump has helped all of you. He couldn't sell steaks or vodka or water or college or ties or Eric, but he has helped you. He's helped you sell your papers and your books and your TV. You helped create this monster, and now you're profiting off of him.
We're with you, Michelle Wolf, but if corporate media has got you down, maybe you should try WBAI. We're listener-supported community radio, questioning the mainstream narratives trumpeted by the news profiteers. But in order for this whole thing to work, we need your help. Please go to give2wbai.org to find out how you can support WBAI or call 516-620-3602. And thanks for supporting Free Speech Radio on WBAI New York.
It's been said that an image is worth a thousand words. A concept implying that a single visual element can replace a multitude of descriptive factors. That one image can carry meaning and definition far more adequately than any verbal or written description. In the case of our own definitions, that is, as Native American people, why have we been reduced to a single word, a single silhouette? Red skin. One word, two syllables. Labeled in many dictionaries as a noun, dated or offensive, and simply defined, an American Indian.
Sego, this is John Kane. Join me for a free screening of More Than a Word, Thursday, September 27th, 7 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons, 388 Atlantic Avenue, right here in Brooklyn, New York.
On Sunday, September 23rd, between 12 and 6 p.m., is the 44th annual Atlantic Antic. Come join some of your favorite WBAI producers in front of 388 Atlantic Avenue for the oldest and largest street festival in Brooklyn, New York. We will be offering greatly reduced price WBAI merchandise, including DVDs, CDs, and books. The festival is free and family friendly. That's this Sunday from 12 to 6 p.m. We hope to see you there.
And you are listening to radio station WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, WBAI.org on the web, and the time is just about 8 p.m. on a Wednesday night. That means it's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. From Billy Bump for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. From Billy Bump.
A very good evening to you. This program is Off the Hook. Rob T. Firefly here with you, and I'm joined in the studio by nobody, no one, not a soul apart from me. But I am joined on the telephone by Emmanuel and Kyle. Are you there, guys?
We barely hear you. Hopefully you can hear us.
I can hear you. Yes. How's that? Is that any better?
Yes, it is better.
Okay, yeah, excellent.
I can hear.
Very cool.
Wow. So nobody is there, huh, Rob?
Nobody, unless you count me, and someone else if you count me twice. But just me here. The rest of you guys.
I feel like I have to apologize because I just as a social experiment, I spread some really nasty rumors about you earlier.
Oh well, that explains
and
a lot.
Apparently, they landed because nobody wants to be within a mile of you.
Typical. That's what I call. Usually, that's what happens to me on Thursdays. But Wednesday is a novelty. But no, this
I'm
is
sorry
a very
about that. Folks, whatever I told you, it was just a joke. So please gather around again.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'll need that in writing and a copy filed with my lawyer. But before we do that, there is a lot to talk about because this is a very special week. I mean, today is Talk Like a Pirate Day, so, you know, yo-ho-ho, et cetera.
Oh, my God, I hate that day so much. I'm sorry, I just do.
Well, you're not here to stop me, so, I mean, this is what happens. It's also, we've got something coming up this weekend. What have we got coming up, Emmanuel?
Oh, yes, that's right, this weekend, maybe I should tell the story. We intend to be at World Maker Faire in Queens this weekend because it's that time of year again, and it's always a blast. We're going to have a special guest on in just a few minutes to talk all about it, and we'll have an opportunity later in the show for you guys listening to win a couple of tickets. But we were preparing the 2600 van, the old phone company van, along with the old 1950s payphone booth to be present again at World Maker Faire. The van engaged in some civil disobedience yesterday and refused to move. So right now, the van is being worked upon to make it possible for us to be there this weekend. I don't want to say it's touch and go. It's not minimal. It's something that we really have to make sure is taken care of and that we get this thing fixed. So that's why we're not here tonight, because we had to deal with that. And we're going to have to deal with that all day tomorrow and possibly a good part of Friday as well. So we're going to do everything we possibly can to get the van there by the weekend, because Maker Faire is awesome. Mm-hmm. We will be moving, what's the phrase, Kyle? Hell and high earth?
Floodwater.
You're moving all kinds of...
We're undeterred.
We're going to do everything we possibly can to get there. So, folks, if you're thinking of going to Maker Faire, you should do everything you can to get there as well, because it's the event that you remember for the whole year until next year when you do it again.
Get there safely, too.
Yes, so we're going to try to do that.
Absolutely. And as you said, we'll be talking more about that in a little bit. We could talk about a couple of other things that have been in the news this week. How's the news been where you are?
We've been following a bunch of things because, you know, we always pay attention. Even though everything is falling apart around us, we still pay attention to what's going on in the world. And I think that's important to do that. One of the things that kind of struck me that I thought was highly amusing, this was supposed to happen tomorrow. They were going to run a test of that feature on all of our cell phones called the presidential alert. This is the one you can't turn off.
Right.
So what they were going to do tomorrow afternoon was basically send a test message that would go to every single cell phone in the United States. This has never been done before. That feature exists, and while you can get emergency alerts and Amber alerts and things like that, you're always able to turn those off. This is something you cannot turn off. What the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, was going to do was test the system on Thursday, tomorrow. But because of Florence, of the Hurricane Florence and the aftermath, they decided that probably wouldn't be a good idea. So they're pushing it back to, I believe, October 3rd, 2 weeks from today. So that's going to be something really interesting, something I think it's an awful thing, and maybe now we don't see the danger, but if one day, say, we had a president that liked to hear himself talk and was irresponsible and maybe even a little incompetent, a general blowhard, somebody who never knows when to shut up and always says the wrong thing at the wrong time, if we ever got somebody like that in the White House, you know, it's possible they could abuse a system like this. And so, I fear for the future, I think I'm fearing for October 3rd. It's going to be interesting, though, when that happens, assuming they don't chicken out.
Yeah, I'm really curious about phones that aren't even subscribed. In other words, ones that can make emergency calls. I noticed on a phone I have that doesn't have a SIM or any provider, I got a weather warning when there was some of the storm and flood stuff going on that phone. I'm really curious that all phones everywhere will be getting these messages, whether they are subscribed or not. And that's kind of interesting, considering the preferred method for our president, you sort of have to follow him on that particular platform, and this is something that you could not escape, and will be really interesting to see what kinds of messages, and as you said, how will that be used, and, you know, God forbid, or, you know, how do we feel about it? Yeah, it's something really interesting.
Right. Could you imagine the current president having an open line to everyone with a phone in the country and using it responsibly?
Honestly, Rob, it would be the worst thing to happen to the cell phone industry. I think subscriptions would fall dramatically. Yeah, but honestly, as a fan of landlines, and we are, this, by the way, is a conversation landline to landline. You might notice it sounds better than most interviews you hear on CNN. I think landlines would prosper as a result of this, because they certainly wouldn't be getting these alerts.
Yeah, it's amazing. But yeah, they're pushing the test back, and we'll see what happens. I know there have been some chatter online about how one might avoid this, and I think most of the methods out there that people are kicking around generally seem to be just turn your phone off for about a half an hour at the appropriate time. Because if your phone is off or if you're in a call, then you're going to get it the next time your phone is on and free. So apparently the theory is that if you leave it off for the full half hour, it will stop trying to give you the alert.
So are you saying that if you turn your phone off and keep it off and turn it back on, the alert will not show up, or will it show up when you turn the phone on?
Apparently it will show up when you turn the phone on, unless you keep your phone off for a full half hour, I think. I think that has been put forth. I don't know by whom or by what authority they say this, but the theory seems to be that it will keep trying to give you the alert for about a half hour.
Right, so that the transmission is sort of cached, but only in sort of a limited way.
Well, Kyle, when you got the flood warning today, it was a flood warning from last week. Was it because you just turned that phone on, or was it sitting around for a week waiting for you to notice?
No, it was the first time I had checked it. It reminded me. I was like, oh, wow, okay. So even phones, yes, it was on, but it's not connected to any sort of wireless at all, whether registered or connected, like over Wi-Fi. So it had basically received messages through its baseband receiver from, I guess, the same E911 or transmission scheme that you would use to make an emergency call in an unregistered SIM-less phone. So if you're curious, people, if you're not trying to avoid it, charge up your old phones and see what happens. We'd love to hear what kind of gatherings or results are come about.
Two of the more popular plans that I'm seeing people discussing right now is simply canceling their cellular plan about an hour or so before the alert is scheduled to go out, and then applying for a new account with a new phone number and everything about a half hour afterwards. So that's another way to avoid it. The other popular way is actually aborting a flight and leaving the country and staying there for at least a couple of hours and then coming back after the alert has been finished. These are ways you might be able to, it's not proven yet because it hasn't happened, but these are possible ways of avoiding hearing the presidential alert when it comes forth in 2 weeks.
And if nothing else, travel does broaden the mind, so you've got that going for you.
Yeah, you could also put it in the microwave for like maybe 15 minutes while it's being sent, probably like on high, I think would be good.
It's going to be interesting. It'll be an historic event, that's for sure. But, you know, there have been many historic events, and I'll tell you, you know, when you have 60, 70 homes blowing up in the Boston area, that's kind of a historic event as well, and all sorts of things have been coming out of that. I saw an article concerning things that were happening during this unfortunate event. Basically, Massachusetts State Police posted to Twitter a map of responses to fires and explosions to sort of demonstrate how large an area this was covering, how many homes were affected. And basically what it was an image of a computer monitor that showed the locations of 39 incidents, as confirmed by what they call MSP Watch Center. It included a message saying, reminder all residents of Lawrence/Andover/North Andover who have Columbia gas must evacuate, as should anyone else who smells gas. But that wasn't all the image showed. It showed something else. It showed a bookmarks bar at the top of the browser window, which listed several left-wing groups. Yeah, they included a Facebook group for mass action against police brutality, the Coalition to Organize and Mobilize Boston Against Trump, Facebook MA Activism, the Resistance Calendar, which basically notes timings for canvassing for Democratic or progressive candidates and anti-Trump rallies. The state police's official Twitter account shared that image at 6:26 p.m. Less than half an hour later, it deleted it and shared a new one, which had been cropped. But the first tweet had already drawn the attention of activists and reporters, who shared screenshots and began a social media debate about online police surveillance. I just love it when the police inadvertently show their hand as to what it is they're actually doing.
See, now, with that, we're just assuming the worst. I mean, this could just be someone working at the police department who also happens to be a very active left-wing activist and is Facebooking from work, which you probably aren't supposed to do. But, you know, maybe there's an innocent explanation for all this, like there was for Alex Jones's other tab in his phone a few weeks ago.
You mean to tell me they only had one tab for this massive explosion and, like, six other tabs for political monitoring? I mean, it seems like they're awful preoccupied, and the people getting blown out of their homes, I mean, they're kind of in the lurch, right? I mean, is that really what you're saying?
One must have priorities. I mean...
Well, I, for one, am pleased that apparently there are no neo-Nazi or ultra-right-wing or supremacist groups in that area that the police were also monitoring. It must mean that that is not at all a problem.
It all seems to make perfect sense to me. Listen, if you guys, I think we should start talking about Maker Faire a bit, and I'm going to go get our guest on the line, so
okay,
I'll turn it over to you guys for a bit.
We'll definitely start talking about Maker Faire amongst ourselves here. Kyle, we've been going to Maker Faire almost since the very beginning. Actually, I think I went to the first one, and you went to the one after that.
That's right.
And it is, for those who have never been a part of this, it takes place by the New York Hall of Science, that whole outdoor area. If you've ever seen the two towers for the World's Fair, you know it's in that general vicinity. That's on the other side of the Grand Central Parkway. But basically the whole area is taken over by tens of thousands of people, kids, adults, all interested in science, in building things. How would you describe the overall scene?
Oh man, I guess the thing you have to say from the beginning is it's a show and tell, right? It's the massive display of a cross between that of a science fair and show and tell, and this year, I think there's even more things in the artistic realm than I've seen before. But yeah, it just is this interdisciplinary confluence of just fantastically passionate people that are into something, that use tools and use the resources available to them to create something that maybe helps them, helps other people. Does something fun, is beautiful in some way, and maybe incorporates technology or some greater problem, and maybe it's a demonstration of something that could help society, or maybe not. Maybe it's an aggravating robot just to remind people of what else is possible. But tons of robotics, tons of electronics, and art, and art displays. Thoughtful stuff and enthusiasm around every corner. You have, like you said, multi-generations of people who are just starting out or people who are getting back into things and everything in between. And we've been doing it for some time. I remember you kind of sharing and getting me a little bit inspired, to say the least, and just realizing how much in what we do is influence. It's important. And how many projects make up the hacking that we do? You know, any hack may have a myriad of things to build and to create, tools and things to help you along the way. And it's a great reminder for me of just how often that spirit is involved in something I'm doing, and it really reinvigorates it every year, every time we go.
Absolutely. You know, it's just a reminder of how many cool people are out there doing really cool things. It's so inspirational. Now, I believe, Rob, you have our special guest?
I do not yet. We're having a little bit of difficulty connecting.
Well,
so
we can go on. We can go on for quite some time.
Please do.
Because what you see is you basically see all kinds of gatherings of people who are involved in various projects, whether it's learning how to solder, whether it's building some kind of a robot or drone. The lockpicking people alone are there. People from Tool have come to many of these things, and you know, kids are learning how to pick locks, and that might sound like a dangerous thing, but actually it's a really incredible thing, because you're learning how it all works, and you're learning how to design things and how to make things better. And I think that's the theme, not only of the hacker world, but of the maker world, and what you see displayed in a very healthy manner at the maker fairs that we've been to. And now, you know, World Maker Fair is what happens in Queens, but there are maker fairs all over the world. This just happens to be one of the biggest.
Yeah, I think they draw upon a lot of the smaller events and encourage people to visit the larger ones that have even bigger space and variety of things on display. And when I'm just noticing that, you know, the tools themselves are becoming, are evolving into things that people are building, like 3D printing is something we've been talking about a little bit. I know Rob has been involved with a lot. But I'm seeing just in some of the events this year, just making your own small 3D printer. And instead of just using a 3D printer you have access to, now it's like, okay, yeah, you can just make one yourself and then go on and do more things with that. But that's something we've been watching just flourish and become incredibly common in like you would use any tool. You know, it's something that people just integrate, whether it's an artistic way or just functional ways. These kinds of things that are kind of new to us are something that people are working with from the start. As I said, whether it's for artistic uses or to build, you know, functional items or both, and it's really exploded as far as just the interest and a variety of things that people can kind of get into. And I think everybody getting together also helps. You know, maybe you've been working on something really hard that's really specific, and, you know, you get to see somebody else doing something that maybe you're into too, but you just haven't, you've been so busy learning and teaching yourself about something that, you know, getting to see how far they got with it can be like a vicarious thing, you know?
I'm going to give a couple of examples, and Rob, I know you're trying to reach our guest. I think we're getting voicemail. Is that what's happening?
That is what's happening. So
okay.
I think maybe we'll try again in a few minutes.
Yeah, give it a few minutes. I've sent them an email asking them to fix that. There are so many things that we can focus on. I'm just looking at some of the things that are planned, featured makers for this weekend. This is the what they call the magic wheelchair. Now, what magic wheelchair is, it pairs a kid with a build team and basically turns that kid's wheelchair into an incredible, epic costume. And, you know, I just see this kid riding what looks like a dragon, and it's just, he's got the happiest look on his face. And according to them, the child experience is what it's like to be seen as simply a child in a cool costume. And you may not realize how amazingly important something like that is to a kid, but when you see them, you know, when you see the joy in their eyes with something like this, you understand the importance of projects like that. And you see that multiplied by so many when you attend an event like this. Now, Magic Wheelchair, it started with one father building a chair for his kid, and now there's a whole network of people doing this for kids all over the world. These things, they spread. A good idea just is planted, and it may not be something that makes you $1 million, but that doesn't make the idea any less valuable. And you see so many things like that. Just oh man, Kyle, the bicycles alone, the kinds of bicycles that you see at Maker Faire.
Yeah, there's a variety of contraptions and transportation. As always, different trends and different things going on. People zooming around. Yeah, as you said, kind of wacky bicycles and tricycles and motorized things, hoverboard type things, and on and on and on. So you got to watch yourself while you're walking around. There's a lot of people, but I like to see that. You know, because someone who might consider a wheelchair is like an encumbrance, something that, you know, it's just something they have to live with, but they see themselves differently, and it's that imaginative thing of modifying, hacking something, making it your own, customizing it. Maybe it's just a bicycle, but you want computers and you want sensors and crazy lasers or whatever it is, you know. You can do that, and this is where you can get encouraged to do that. Now, the Power Wheel Racing is going to be back. That's the kids' electric cars are modified, and they race those around on a racetrack. I think it's basically a goal to keep it under a certain budget. Always a hit, and always really lively. Another interesting one I saw was the Foldscope. It's a paper microscope that is ultra affordable. But it's designed to be able to fold down and take with you, but give you the same magnification of like a proper professional lab microscope. And I really like these kinds of things because it's kind of democratizing tools so that, you know, these instruments aren't left in kind of the lofty scientific academic towers, so to speak, but rather the people in the field that are doing research, that are looking at different things in the field, are able to just put something together right there and examine and get back to work, in other words, and create and be empowered by having that portability and affordability that could actually go to really, really important research. And that's ingenuity to me. And the affordability of across the board, just looking at things differently and making them more accessible, I think, is a strong, strong theme and a problem that I think everyone is really interested in.
Yeah, that's something that I've thought is so important in the spirit of events like Maker Faire, and it blows me away every time we go, is just that whole thing about inspiring not only the hacker maker community as it stands, but the young people who are basically the budding hackers, just starting to explore and see what they can do with the stuff to hand or what they can learn, and just doing all sorts of awesome things. There's going to be featured young makers at Maker Faire. There's a whole section. There's someone called Ray who builds Ray's robots, and this is a young person who is bringing a bunch of robots that she made, and another maker with something called Vistelli Labs who is presenting different projects and concepts, and just like looking at the pictures of this stuff, which we can't show you on the radio, unfortunately, but there's so much cool stuff going on and so many like really interesting and diverse people throwing in and showing off what they can do in this. I know Becky Button, who I met there last year, who had a project. She's a young hacker who had a project for Wi-Fi hacking sandals that you could just walk around in, and it would de-auth things that you walked near. And she's going to be back.
Hold on. Wi-Fi sandals?
Yep. Wi-Fi sandals. Wi-Fi hacking sandals that were 3D printed sandals, basically, that had. I don't remember exactly what board she used, but basically the hardware in it to basically run Wi-Fi hacks while you're walking around, and it's you know, very stealthy, very cool, very non-standard use of the tech, and really, really, just really imaginative. And there's all sorts of meetups going on of different groups in the hacker maker community. There's classes, crafts, things on display, things you can get, and just some of the stuff that we have there, which I always enjoy. We've been known to bring old telephones and stuff, haven't we?
We have been known to do that. In fact, as I mentioned before, we bring our 1950s phone booth. I got to tell you, you know, we spent a good part of last night, Kyle and myself, just hoisting this payphone booth from the 1950s into our 2600 former phone company van from the 1980s. And it is so heavy. That phone booth is so incredibly heavy. We almost got crushed a couple of times doing that. And then we got the thing into the van finally after a good half hour of pushing and diving for cover and figuring out our plan, only to find that the van wouldn't start. So we had to get that situation dealt with. And it's still being dealt with, as I mentioned, and I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that we can get the thing going by the time of Maker Faire. Even if we can't, Maker Faire is certainly an event worth going to. You know, whenever we go there, we meet so many people who have been at the Hope Conference, and we also meet so many people who listen to WBAI. And I think that is just an incredible mix of people who basically learn all sorts of things from each other and contribute all sorts of ideas. And it's, you know, it gives us enough to talk about for the whole remainder of the year. I mean, just, you know, 3D printing alone.
Yes.
I remember, you know, one of the earlier Maker Faires, which, you know, we're talking less than 10 years, seeing a massive amount of 3D printers back when that was something that was fairly unheard of. And now it's something that everybody is talking about, and you just see continued advances and imagination. And just, you know, you're talking about printing limbs now for people who have lost limbs.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about, in the future, printing organs and, you know, basically extending life in many ways through this technology. You see kids just basically dreaming about what it is they might be able to do someday. And that is the magic of events like this, of whether it's a hacker event or an event outside like this one. It's something that just makes people, you know, for the older folks among us, you might remember something that took place pretty close to where Maker Faire takes place, the World's Fair from mm-hmm. the early 1960s. You know, everybody who went to that as a kid still remembers it. They still remember the picture phones. You know, they still remember the various promises that were being planted in our minds as to what we might be doing in the future. Some of it we are doing, some of it we never did. But those events, they really are significant to young minds. And I think, you know, if you have a kid, it's really incumbent upon you to bring them to an event like this so that their imagination can really begin to flourish.
Absolutely. And 3D printing is a great example because, as you said, just a few Maker Faires ago, this was on display as like this crazy new thing that that people can do. These tools exist and you have access to them. And now it's kind of more of an accepted thing, but the wonder is now in what are people doing with them? And not only that the tools are getting easier and easier to get hold of, but people are doing so many more things with them because they've had some time to play with them. And the stuff that you go to this Maker Faire and see is brand new and weird and out there, like, where's that going to be in another 5 years? That's going to be the sort of accepted workaday thing that we're now, that now is a tool that everyone can use. So it's really wonderful to go to these, not just once, but over the years and see where things go and where they've been and where they're headed.
Yeah, that is incredibly exciting for me as well. That's why I was saying, you know, that just to see people building their own kinds of equipment and hacking the tools that themselves were projects of other hackers and makers, just it just blows me away. And I'm not going to lie, I'm very seriously interested. I've been asking and talking to Rob about it and mm-hmm. Very interested in rapid prototyping and being able to do the same kinds of design. This is it. You know, you see students doing incredible stuff. You yourself, you can't help but start thinking, you know, what would it take to maybe incorporate that in this idea that I had? And all of a sudden your idea is an object, you know, right there, and then you can maybe test it out. That is an incredible, incredible technology, and I'm a little I'm inspired, and I can't help but wish that I had the same kinds of tools. But it was still emerging, you know, when I was a student, and now I'm, you know, basically able to observe and see what is basically you know, encouraged in the classroom today. And as an adult, I just really love embracing it and learning it myself. You can't let students have all the fun, you know, with some of this stuff. It's really just inspiring and, as you said, can make an impact and further your project. I just want to say, the phone booth, too, that emerged kind of from our participation. One thing you notice at Maker Faires, and Rob mentioned this with the sandals, packaging for your project can be anything. It doesn't necessarily have to just be a box with the thing in it. And yeah, you can make turn these. Well, why not? If I'm going to hack stuff, I want to walk around. So of course I'll build some sandals for my wireless hacking software and hardware to fit in. And so we started playing around with the idea of what if we could make a switch in a small container and connect up all these phones, and what if we got a phone booth? And then it sort of evolved into this big thing. So now I guess we call it like a tapped telemegaphone, and basically we've got two phones or three phones connected, and people can try it out, and then we can amplify it so people can hear the conversation in between as though they're being sort of eavesdropped on, but we just blare it out along with all the other music. And
it is so cool to see kids coming up and just playing with rotary phones.
Oh,
some
yes.
don't even know how to make a rotary phone call, so they're pressing the numbers and looking at it like it's from outer space. But others get it right away. Others really are appreciative of this old technology, just like, you know, sometimes young people like old cameras with film. Well, similarly, they like old telephone equipment, as we do as well, because it tends to last forever. And on that subject, passing a message to Rob,
mm-hmm.
ironically enough, the reason we can't get through to our guests is because their cell phone died.
Oh.
So we have an alternate number that we have emailed you, so if you could connect to that, then we can actually talk to somebody. But I think
okay,
that
I've got it. So
technology
I will.
can backfire sometimes.
Okay, I've got that. So I will make use of that and turn it over to you guys for a minute.
Okay. Well, I mean, I just want to continue on that note. This is not necessarily all about high technology. If you find yourself as somebody who isn't that much into computers, robots, whatever, you think maybe you don't have as many skills as the 6 and 7 year olds these days. You're probably right because we don't. But what these kids are doing today just simply is mind-boggling. But it's not all about that. It's about just letting your mind go free. And here's an example: something called the beer duck. Yeah, the beer duck. It's a waterfowl delivering your beer when you're out for a swim, boat, float, or any other water activity. It's a remote-controlled duck. Well, it's not a real duck, obviously. It's a beer duck. You stick a beer in it. It has a 3D printed outboard motor, and your favorite beer tucks snugly on its back, and it'll go wherever you send it. So these kinds of toys can do all kinds of things. And whether or not you design something or are just into looking at things, look at the tiny homes. Have you seen this, Kyle? I know you're into tiny homes.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a controversial thing now. Apparently, it's not all it's cracked up to be. People want bigger tiny homes. What do they got now?
Tiny homes. I want smaller tiny homes. But here's one. It's a 54-square-foot self-sustaining micro home. It measures 6 feet wide by 10 feet long, 9 feet high. It's self-sustaining, solar power, water tanks, a composting toilet. It's been lived in full time since October 2017, and you can see that at Maker Faire. So this kind of thing is just—it's so wildly inspiring, and also so completely full of a variety of different things that it'll just leave your head spinning.
Awesome, you guys! I've just tied some soup cans and string together and got this working. So we should have our guest with us on the line.
Awesome! Is this Sabrina?
Yeah. Hey there.
Hey, it's Sabrina. Great. Sorry about your phone.
I know, it's, we're in show mode here, and then, I think the phone's been working overtime and hit bottom there, but we're here
okay.
together.
We're speaking with Managing Director Sabrina Merlo, and I can only imagine the anticipation you guys are feeling. We've been talking about this nonstop now for about 20 minutes with our enthusiasm, but you guys know all the things that are going to be happening in the next a few days. Can you tell us something about
the preparation?
Yeah,
it sounds like you guys have been doing your homework there, talking about the tiny homes. That's new this year. And I think that it is super interesting, this like exploration of, resourcefulness and what how folks can sort of design for efficiencies, right, and sustainability. And that is definitely a scene where individuals or groups are kind of owning those experiments in living. So we've got some community-driven examples of people doing different versions of alternative architecture. That's kind of cool. And we have actually this year, we brought in also a homegrown village for the first time. We've done that in the Bay Area quite a few times, but we've got more kind of food-centric stuff in a hands-on homegrown workshop stage for people to do things like make bitters or, you know, other kinds of food-oriented hands-on making activities. So yeah, we're all super excited. It's a slow build manifestation. We got into Queens. I guess we started building out on Thursday. The first tents dropped. So it's all seeming very, very near, and we're super excited.
And I should point out that this is a rain or shine event. In the event that it rains, there's plenty of activity indoors as well. But since we've had a tropical storm roll through here, we had about 2 weeks straight of rain before that, I think we're safe for this weekend. I think this will be a sunny and rather pleasant weekend. It's definitely worth coming out too, and it's easy to get to on the number 7 train.
Yes, it is. It's super easy. We saw a tweet go around, actually someone analyzing the weather, saying this might be the best weather year for Maker Faire in recent memory. So we're hoping that's true, but there is tons to do. Both indoor and outdoor.
Can you tell us how people can get there if they're driving?
Yeah, we have. It's actually very easy to find all of our Getting to Maker Faire instructions online at makerfaire.com/ALT, A-L-T. That is the homepage for all of our transpo, from bikes to train and public transportation. And parking, we have parking at Citi Field shuttles that get you from Citi Field closer to the show.
And so, last year there was a concert taking place at the same time, which caused some competition for parking. But I think this year
we don't have that issue this year.
That's a relief.
Excellent.
That really is. And the website is Maker Faire. That's spelled MakerFaire. A lot of people don't know about the E at the end, .com.
That is correct.
And you can find out all kinds of information there. Now, do you folks still need volunteers?
We can always put folks to some meaningful work in exchange for tickets. I believe there's also plenty of information about our traveler program online at makerfaire.com. If you have interest in putting some work in exchange for a ticket, there are opportunities there for that.
Okay, and we will have an opportunity in just a few minutes for some of our listeners to get a couple of free tickets as well. But I just wanted to talk about some of the other things that are going on this year. Now, I know you guys are really big into robots, and there's robot battles, I think, going on.
Yeah, we have tremendous amount of robotics. Mass Destruction coming in from Massachusetts has a whole series of competitions going on. There's a lot of FIRST Robotics participants, and then there's, of course, sort of iterations and creativity around people's different robots for different purposes. So there's varying levels of robots, and then we have maybe we'd call it a robot, but you know, if you want to think about it, our giant our machine, at least our the hand of man that will be doing some interesting demonstrations of hydraulic strength with its 26-foot arm reach. It's controlled by a glove with riddled with sensors, and the operator wears the glove, and the giant hand basically mimics the behaviors of the hand in the glove. So a child can, by proxy, pick up and crush cars, for example.
Oh, wow.
That's my artist Christian Risto.
Brilliant.
It's a fabulous piece.
Talking of art, I know you've got something else new that I'm pretty excited about. It's the first time you're doing this. You're having a cosplay prop contest at Maker Faire, and that's something I'm a fan of. But for those unfamiliar, how does that work?
Well, we were talking with some friends. Actually, the whole thing started out of a conversation with Adam Savage, who
we know him
was you know who that guy is.
he spoke at our convention in the past health conference.
Yeah. So we were having conversation about it, and when we were talking with some folks in the cosplay community, that was in a way we thought a great angle for trying to generate a little bit more folks coming out who are doing the making in the cosplay world. And so we have had a competition. Entries they're still open, but the formal deadline was actually Tuesday night. We'll be doing sort of the live showcase of those props and the competition on Sunday at 1 p.m. on our auditorium, our main stage.
Excellent. And of course, during Maker Faire, also apart from scheduled events, there are also just people walking around in the most interesting outfits and costumes and creative expressions. I think last time we saw a gorilla and a Ghostbuster and whatever else. But there's just so much creativity going on in every possible medium, I think, on display both at the fair itself and just among the attendees. And that's something that I love.
I agree with you. I think that's why we're all so drawn to it. It's the range of creativity that's showcased at Maker Faire that's kind of inspiring, and the appreciation across disciplines, right? Like that you can you have this audience that's inspired by like the deeply technical. Maybe it's these innovations in robotics or in digital fabrication, but also just in the plain goofy or even, craft, like learning how to do lace making or, learning how to make kombucha or whatever that is. It's really the this celebration of that engagement and that sort of open source culture. People just really interested in kind of learning and sharing what they know.
Sabrina, can I ask how you got involved in the whole Maker movement?
Sure. Well, I've been on the team at Maker Faire since 2010, and I came to Maker Faire actually. I was as an attendee with my two little kids the very first year. I've been a part of the art and technology community in San Francisco Bay Area for, I don't know, most of my life. And so when Maker Faire, the first Maker Faire happened, it was my community really that participated, people that I had done projects with. I worked with a robotics group called Survival Research Laboratories in San Francisco. I was, had worked at the Exploratorium there. Museum in San Francisco, Science and Museum of Human Perception. So it was in some ways an organic evolution, my involvement in Maker Faire as an attendee, then as a maker. And then I started one of the very first mini Maker Faires in my town of Oakland, California.
Okay.
So I really spent since 2010 until earlier this year, I drove primarily the growth of the global Maker Faire network and all of the mini Maker Faires and also the featured fairs around the world. So now we're at over 200 Maker Faires in 44 countries last year, which is really just kind of an astonishing bottom-up explosion of maker culture around the world.
That's amazing. And when you say you're from Oakland, I can see where a lot of inspiration comes from. That's mm-hmm. one of my favorite cities right now, having visited it recently.
Mine too.
We love how the train goes straight down the street by Jack London Square.
You guys, we are running low on time, and we have something we have to do because we're talking about Maker Faire.
Thank you for reminding me. We are giving away a couple of pairs of tickets to the Maker Faire, World Maker Faire, taking place this weekend at the Hall of Science in Queens. What you must do is email us at oth@2600.com and say you want two tickets. You can have either a pair of tickets for Saturday, a pair of tickets for Sunday, or you can have one ticket for Saturday and one ticket for Sunday, as long as the number is two at the end. And we have two We have two pairs like this. So the first two people who write in request this and don't confuse us too badly, we'll get those, and we will send you the tickets by email. Yes, you have to have email in order to do this, oth@2600.com. And also, if you have won in the past, you are not eligible for this. This is for people who have not won in the past. So good luck to everybody, oth@2600.com. And those of you who aren't able to get free tickets, it is well worth going. We can't mention prices on the air, but we can say that this is a worthy cause, and that Sabrina, how many people do you estimate will be showing up at this?
Oh, I think we are somewhere in the range of probably 70,000 to 80,000 over the 3 days. We have a Friday education forum for those of you out there that are educators. I believe there's still some tickets left for our Make Education Forum, which is a really interesting opportunity to kind of get the lowdown from the experts and thinkers and doers in the maker education world. So that we start, everything starts Friday morning really for us.
I imagine it starts a lot earlier than that for putting this together. We just done a conference in July, and we're still recovering from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have an incredible team. I will say we are a team of makers behind Maker Faire, and I think some of the energy around Maker Faire emanates right from the center in terms of the people that put on the show. It's really an incredible group of people with a myriad range of talents and real commitment to the show. People, our forklift drivers come back to the show every year. It's a very special group of people.
I want to issue congratulations. The tickets are gone. Congratulations to Jerry and to Finn for winning the two pairs of tickets that we had. Anybody else who is still typing a message, you might as well stop because we've given away the tickets. But thank you very much for participating, for listening, and please come anyway because it's going to be an awesome event, well worth I mean, we've been talking nonstop about it for the last 40 minutes or so, and we can continue going. It's fun. It is so much fun. And I'll tell you, Sabrina, I'd love to go to one of these other events in another part of the country. I've never been to the Bay Area Maker Faire, which is, I believe, even bigger than the World Maker Faire here in New York.
It is. There are, next weekend, if you're like Maker Faire Milwaukee is a 60,000 person event. There are, Maker Faire Orlando is coming up. That's an incredible event as well. Check out makerfaire.com/map for a picture of all the maps and the calendars of Maker Faires coming up near you.
Wow. Sabrina, is there anything else that you'd like to tell us, maybe preview some other things, any particular displays or speakers or events that you want to make sure people don't miss?
Well, other highlights, we have Adam Savage for the first time at Maker Faire New York. He's coming with the new cast of MythBusters Jr., which is really great to see. They're taking a pretty straight approach to MythBusters Challenge. They're not dumbing it down for the kids, so that's going to be an interesting one. We have so many great presenters on stage, like Alon Lee. We have Aya Badir, founder of Little Bits. I mean, it's just an incredibly deep and rich catalog, an opportunity to connect and rub elbows with really an incredibly inspiring and inspired creative bunch of people. Really, really encourage folks who are slightly tempted to try to make the trip. There's so much going on. Check out the schedule, for all kinds of activities. We have a whole range. We rolled out a whole bunch of deeper dive workshops this show, so people can actually do like hour or 2 hour long kind of deeper dive things as an experiment, trying to get some more maker shops.
This is something that spans the globe. I'm just looking now at some of the featured makers that you have, and I see one that really captured my interest, autonomous robot to carry bricks. And this comes from India. There are, I believe, 5 young makers behind this. A group of students from India, they created an autonomous robot that can take bricks from one place to another place with manual loading and unloading. It works based on the count of the number of bricks and uses a line-following mechanism to navigate around the place. And that you know, is going to be just interesting to watch as it operates.
There's actually quite a range of international makers. This really is World Maker Faire. I think we have people from 20 countries, around 20 countries. I could be wrong, but I think it's close to that, who are showing. There's another good one that's kind of in that range of making for good that's called the Chi-Fi Kettle, which is a kettle that generates Wi-Fi, like a tea kettle for low bandwidth areas. There's
a good combination.
Really darling. Go ahead.
That's a good combination.
Yeah, I know, and I love the name, the Chi-Fi, right?
There's a cotton candy robot, too, I hear.
Oh, those guys are amazing. So I met them at Maker Faire Cairo, and it's a group of ferociously talented young robotics kids into robotics, and this was their idea of a fun project, not a serious competitional project, but it just won my heart. It's darling, and they came all the way from Egypt to show at Maker Faire New York.
Well, we have to see that, and if we have to push the 2600 van there, we're going to do it. We're going to make it there somehow, and really looking forward to this, and I hope we meet a lot of listeners there as well, in addition to all kinds of other people from around the globe. The Maker Faire, World Maker Faire, takes place at the Hall of Science in Queens, reachable by the 7 train. There's all kinds of transportation information at makerfaire.com. That's makerfaire.com. Takes place this Saturday and Sunday, September 22nd and 23rd. You know, what are the operating hours?
It's 10 to 6 both days.
Great. And definitely make an appearance, whether it's for one day or both days, and be inspired, because this it really is the future here. We haven't even touched upon space travel, but I know whenever you get kids and science together, the topic of space comes up, and there'll be plenty of talk about that, I'm sure.
As well, it should.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you guys so much for your ongoing support of Maker Faire. We really appreciate your commitment to and interest in the event. It really means a lot.
Well, we look forward to seeing you there, and we look forward to seeing the tens of thousands of other people.
Very cool.
All right.
Thank you for joining us, Sabrina.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
See you at Maker Faire.
Good night.
Bye.
Yep, and we are just about out of time here, but yes, come to Maker Faire, come see us at Maker Faire, look for the 2600 van, because I truly love when we get to speak with our listeners about stuff, because, you know, usually this is a one-directional conversation, being a broadcaster, so.
And if you see the 2600 van pulled over to the side of one of the roads leading to Queens, won't you pull over and give us a hand, as we're probably in trouble of some sort. We just have to get the van there. It doesn't actually have to run. It just has to get there. That's what we're shooting for right now. And the future, who knows?
Absolutely. Well, send us email at oth@2600.com. Follow us on Twitter, Hacker Radio Show. You can also follow us on Mastodon, Hacker Radio Show at mastodon.social. And we hope to see you there. Have a wonderful week.
Good night.
Versace jeans and DVDs from your dad's mates. Wallets, watches and some songs off the radio, tweaking your expenses claim. Now tell me honestly, is your software bought and paid for? Have you ever photocopied from a book? Now okay, we can't pretend that we're sailing close to legal, but hypocrisy just can't be overlooked. Yo ho ho, we're unstoppable, you know. Yo ho ho, to the seas. All you've left is a knowledge artist left and an audience that's trained to all respects. Stars of Hollywood and rock bands of some esteem will moan, but it don't do much good, 'cause all this sky-high fees and crippling ticket costs could feed and protect.
Jacobs, host of Afrobeat Radio, where we discuss politics, current affairs, music, arts, and culture from an African perspective on Wednesdays, 10 p.m. to midnight. I invite you to Afrobeat Radio's monthly third Wednesdays, starting at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, September 19, at the Brooklyn Commons, 388 Atlantic Avenue, featuring dance workshops, music, food and beverages, life-affirming conversations, innovators, pop-up markets, and more. To participate, visit afrobeatradio.com and click on events, or look up hashtag Afrobeat Radio Third Wednesdays. One word. See you September 19th at 6:30 p.m.
How do we prepare for a post-Roe America? Joy of Resistance will ask three reproductive justice experts on Thursday, September 20th, 7 to 8 p.m. You'll hear activist and journalist Robin Marty on how post-Roe will differ from what it was like before Roe. Farah Diaz-Tello, attorney with the self-induced abortion legal team on the coming rise of abortion by pill and the criminalization of women who use it. And Loretta Ross, co-founder of Sister Song, a woman of color reproductive justice collective, on how to stop the combined forces of white nationalist and anti-abortion terrorism. So join us Thursday, September 20th at 7 p.m., Joy of Resistance, new time slot, and catch up with what you'll need to know in a rapidly changing legal landscape.
Today is September the 19th, 2018. Do you know who has your personal data? Let me ask the question a little differently. Do you know who's using your personal data? Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key. My colleague is Joe King. Podcasts of the programs available on wbai.org/archive. We're also on PRN.FM and on our website, PCRadioshow.org. We are on WBAI-FM 99.5 New York, on the radio, and PRN.FM on the internet each Wednesday with essentially the same program, except when WBAI is in a membership drive, the programs are a little different. In the case of the Apple Watch, the killer app has always been health. Apple announced the new Apple Watch Series 4 with edge-to-edge displays, which are more than 30% bigger than displays on current models. The Series 4 starts at $399 with GPS or $499 with a cellular, and the top-of-the-line unit selling for $1499. The Apple Watch Series 3 is still in production, but the lower starting price at $279. The Watch Series 4 is redesigned. It features fall detection and heart monitoring. The Series 4 is clever enough to sense when you're falling. It works this out from the movement of your arm, which are different when falling to when slipping or doing other similar actions. If you fall and then remain still for a certain time, it will assume that something bad has happened and contact emergency services and send your location to your emergency contacts using the SOS feature. The Apple Watch already had the ability to detect and warn of a prolonged elevated heart rate when not exercising, but its heart monitoring abilities get far more sophisticated with a Series 4 update. Most simply, it will now be able to spot low rates too. Less commonly a problem, but potentially something to look out for. The Series 4 will also look out for irregular heart rhythms, notifying you of a potential atrial fibrillation. Many journalists have touted this to be a major breakthrough, and it is a revolutionary technology. Hey, Omron has released such a product earlier this year with the same features. I think these journalists ought to do a little more research. Apple is positioning the new watch as a more comprehensive health device, able to take an electrocardiogram to detect an irregular heartbeat, as well as detect a user falling down to initiate an emergency call automatically. This may be potentially appealing to older customers. However, the battery life is still 18 hours and then it needs recharging overnight, between 9 p.m. and 7 p.m., perhaps when older people wake up to use the bathroom. Apple kept the same design for three generations in a row. The Series 4 is a redesign of the Apple Watch. The most obvious change is the inclusion of screens which are more than 30% larger. They now are 40 millimeters and 44 millimeters, up from 38 millimeters and 42 millimeters. The new watches are slimmer than the Series 3, which means that despite the larger screens, they have less volume than their predecessors. Straps released with the Series 3 and earlier models are compatible with the Series 4 and vice versa. The Series 4 is available in stainless steel or aluminum. The OR ceramic edition has been dropped. Finally, the speaker has been bumped up. Apple says it's 50% louder now, and the microphone aperture has swapped sides to move it away from the speaker. Hopefully, this will all result in much better call quality. One problem with the Apple Watch is the necessity of charging it at night means people can't use it for sleep tracking. For older people who may fall 20% of the time during those hours, who's to watch over them? A major question being asked is, how accurate are wrist-worn monitoring devices? The Journal of the AMA is a peer-reviewed medical journal published 48 times a year by the American Medical Association. It's called JAMA. It publishes original research, reviews, and editorials covering all aspects of the biomedical sciences. In a recent publication in JAMA was a study on the accuracy of wrist-worn heart rate monitors. Wrist-worn fitness and heart rate monitors are popular. While the accuracy of chest strap electrode-based heart rate monitors have been confirmed, the accuracy of wrist-worn optically based heart rate monitors is uncertain. Assessment of the monitor's accuracy is important for individuals who use them to guide their physical activity and for doctors to whom these individuals report heart rate readings. The objective of this study was to assess the accuracy of four popular wrist-worn heart rate monitors under conditions of varying physical exertion. This study recruited 50 healthy adults. The mean age was 37. Participants were women, which made up 58% of the study, and seven participants were Afro-American, which consisted of 14% of the study. Excluded from the study was people who had cardiovascular disease, pacemakers, and treatment with heart rhythm medications. The protocol was approved by the Cleveland Clinic Institutional Review Board. Participants wore standard electrocardiographic chest strap monitors secured tightly to ensure skin contact. Each participant was randomly assigned to wear two different wrist-worn heart rate monitors placed tightly above the ulnar styloid. Four wrist-worn monitors were assessed: Fitbit Charge heart rate monitor, the Apple Watch, Mia Alpha, and the Basis Peak. Heart rate were assessed with the participant on a treadmill at rest and at 2 miles per hour, 3 miles per hour, 4 miles per hour, 5 miles per hour, and 6 miles per hour. Participants exercised at each setting for 3 minutes to achieve a steady state. Heart rates were recorded instantaneously at the 3-minute point. After completion of the treadmill protocol, heart rate were recorded at 30, 60, and 90 second recovery. Across all devices, which consisted of 1,773 heart rate values were recorded, 27 data points were not obtained because of inability to complete the treadmill protocol or monitors losing skin contact. Heart rates range from 49 to 200 beats per minute. When compared with electrocardiogram, the heart rate monitors had variable accuracy as assessed by the analysis showed that variability occurred across the spectrum of mid-range heart rates during exercise with less variability at the tail ends. The Apple Watch and MiFuse had a 95% of difference for within minus 27 to plus 29 beats per minute of the electrocardiogram, while Fitbit Charge heart rate monitor had a 95% value within minus 34 and plus 39 beats per minute. And the corresponding values for the basis peak were within minus 39 to plus 33 beats per minute. Body mass index, age, and sex did not influence the monitor accuracy. They found variable accuracy among wrist-worn heart rate monitors. None achieved the accuracy of a chest strap-based monitor. In general, accuracy of wrist-worn monitors were best at rest and diminished with exercise. This study is limited by examination of convenience study of four heart rate monitors in young healthy adults exercising on a treadmill. Results should be confirmed with different types of exercise and with other devices. Continuous heart rate assessment, which is currently not feasible with all devices, would enable more detailed comparisons. Electrode-containing chest monitors should be used when accurate heart rate measurement is imperative, while wrist-worn heart rate monitors are often used recreationally to track fitness, the accuracy varies. Two of the four monitors had suboptimal accuracy during moderate exercise. Appropriate validation of these devices in this group is imperative, which means use these heart rate monitors as a guide. Despite incremental improvements, this is a transformational year for iPhone. Internally, those devices boast some incremental improvements over last year's iPhone X. Among them, a new A12 Bionic chip that improves performance across the board while also increasing power usage efficiency, an upgraded dual camera, and, of course, the new XS Max has the 6.5-inch Super Retina HD display, which makes it the largest iPhone screen to date. Beyond the increased screen size of the XS Max, there's really nothing new about these new flagship phones that make an iPhone X owner, well, chomping at the bit to ditch their one-year-old device for the latest and greatest iPhone. This new crop of iPhones is all about adoption and standardizing the iPhone X design. Last week, Apple announced its new iPhone XS, iPhone XS Max, and iPhone XR devices. Apple has lowered the starting price of its iPhone 7 and iPhone 8 models by $100. The iPhone 7, iPhone 7 Plus, iPhone 8, and iPhone 8 Plus now start at $449, $569, $599, and $689 respectively. Apple's new iPhone XS, pronounced XS, has a 5.8-inch screen and starts at $999. The XS Max, the largest iPhone to date and one of the biggest on the market, has a 6.5-inch screen and starts at $1099. This year's three top phones are all more expensive than last year's models. At the same time, Apple has discontinued the iPhone SE, iPhone 6S, iPhone 6S Plus, and iPhone X. It's no surprise that Apple would drop the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus. The company typically discontinues older models each year when it launches new ones. It started offering these phones in 2015, and they've since been replaced by the iPhone 7 and iPhone 8 models,